1986, Lillian Kivala is being interviewed for her service overseas, and she is a member of the Lansing unit of the Women's Overseas Service League. This is Elsie Hornbacher talking, and I live at 2114 Meadow Lane Drive, Lansing, Michigan. That's 48906. My telephone number, the area code is 517, and the number is 321-2453. Lillian, what is your address?
4644 Grand Woods Drive, Lansing, Michigan, 48917. It's the same area code, 517.
Then, no, not the same as mine. Mine is 48906, yours is 48.
No, the 517 area code.
The area code for the telephone, yeah. Right. Now, the zip code is what I was
323-2422, yeah, I jumped the gun on that.
Okay. Lillian, where did you serve overseas?
England, mainly. Mm-hmm. And then,
what made you decide to go overseas?
Oh, I don't know. Of course, I went into the Army first. That was the first decision to make. And I was going because everybody was going in the Army. I thought, well, this is my chance. I'll go, too.
Things were a little different back in that day and age, weren't they?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. I had two brothers in the service.
Oh, you did have two brothers.
Mm-hmm. And I joined also.
How long had they gone before you went?
Well, they went in quite early. My one brother went in I think, 40. And my other brother went in 41.
And you went in what year?
43. 1943, yeah.
You were in the Army Nurse?
Yes.
Corps?
Mm-hmm.
Then you said you decided to go because you had two brothers, and it was the trend of the day to go overseas and to help in the war effort.
Right.
I think America was quite different back in those days than it is now. We were all ready to... We were much more patriotic.
Yes.
Had you worked before you went into the...
I'd graduated from nurses training a year before, but I had not worked except private duty occasionally. I went to college. I was going to get a degree in nursing education at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I dropped that and went into the service.
Where were you inducted?
At Chick General Hospital in Iowa.
Iowa. Were you born in Iowa?
Yes, I was.
Uh-huh.
But I grew up in South Dakota.
But you grew up in South Dakota. Mm-hmm. Just ramble on and tell me about your beginning experiences and trace it through the war.
Well, at Chick General? Well, that was just relatively new general hospital because the nurses' quarters were still not equipped with furniture. I remember arriving there in the middle of the night when I first went into the service, and the night duty nurse took me over to a room and with two sheets. It was chilly. I didn't know whether to use my jacket for a pillow or a cover. It was very miserable the rest of the night. But after that, we had, there were about, I think, 10 or 12 of us, I can't remember, that arrived there about the same time, and so we did our basic training and all that type of thing together.
What was your housing like there?
Well, barracks type. We had
barracks.
A room of our own with a bathroom between two rooms.
Now, how many people in a room?
Just one.
Just one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You had a private room then and a bathroom between and a roommate on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to wear a uniform then?
Well, actually, not all the time because they didn't have uniforms for everybody. They did give us, actually, when I got there, they gave us the old World War I blue uniforms. They're beautifully made. I've still got some of them. But then later they went to the OD, or the olive drab uniforms. But I have several pictures taken in those old blues.
How long were you in Iowa? And what was your basic training like there?
Oh, we had 2 weeks of marching and drilling and hiking. And then we'd go to films, training films, just like... other soldiers did. It was a 2-week affair. We didn't really go to where they have shoot the bullets over. We didn't do that where we were. Can't remember what they call that. Anyway, but then we worked on wards. And I think I worked on a cardiovascular ward there. Took blood pressures all day long. There's a lot of rheumatic fever patients. And then I think I went on night duty on the officer's ward.
Who were these patients? Soldiers who had returned?
Mm-hmm. No, they were hadn't gone overseas yet, so they were all... I think a lot of them came from Fort Leonard Wood and around that area that had gotten severe, had flu epidemic there that was terrible, and afterwards they had a lot of rheumatic fever and problems that followed that in that area down there in Missouri.
Now, you were there 2 weeks.
No, I was there longer. Our basic training lasted 2 weeks. I was there from June until Christmas time, I believe. Wait a minute. I was there June until October.
Of 43?
Yes. June till October 43, and then I was transferred to O'Reilly General in Springfield, Missouri.
Springfield, Missouri now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what did you do at Springfield, Missouri?
Well, I started working on a cardiovascular ward there, and I moved to a surgical ward, one on night duty. And very interesting. I noticed Dr. Meade died just recently, was at O'Reilly General. That surprised me. Anyway, I was there until November, and then my orders came to go overseas.
Until November of 1943?
Mm-hmm. So I wasn't there very long.
Mm-hmm.
At O'Reilly General. Just a couple months, I think.
What about friendships and so forth during that period of time?
Well,
You probably didn't...
Don't have any continuing friendships from O'Reilly. Of course, some of them at Schick General, when I'd been there, eventually joined the same unit I went overseas with, so I have new people from at that time that continued on. But we returned to Schick General, surprisingly enough. And the 91st General was forming there. They'd been training when I was there before. The corpsmen were training at the 91st, at Schick General for the 91st. So it had been forming for some time. June 21st, I guess, is when they started. So it was just about the time I went into service that the 91st started training. And we went overseas. Then we all came back to Schick General. The nurses, they picked up the nurses and doctors, and they arrived there. And from there, we went to our station where we went overseas, which would have been... what's the name of that port? The little trees, you remember that?
Mm-mm. The port?
Let's see.
Where you left?
Yeah.
The United States?
Yeah, I'll think of it later.
Was it on the East Coast?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Brunswick, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So we were there in Brunswick for several weeks. And at that point, until they were waiting for a ship to take us overseas. And... we got into New York 2-3 times, and I went down to Philadelphia twice, and so we got a little bit of sightseeing in there.
You were able to entertain yourselves rather than work at
mm-hmm.
that period of
yeah.
time.
Mm-hmm.
Were you afraid of going overseas?
No.
No fear at all?
Mm-mm.
Were you anxious to go?
Well, sure. Sounded like a good idea at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We went to overseas and finally got on the... Aquitania, which was a sister ship of the Lusitania.
Mm-hmm.
And
is this a big ship or a little one?
It had 8,000 troops on it.
And that's a large one, isn't it?
It was a large one, although they were crowded. Normally it wouldn't carry that many people.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it was 4 times as many as they normally carry.
But a big ship rides better than a small one, doesn't it?
Well, it's a matter of opinion.
Were
it's pretty rough. No, I didn't get seasick. I refused to.
What kind of facilities did you have on the ship? Were you down low or up above?
I can't even remember what we never stayed in the rooms.
I see.
We always go up on deck. That way you didn't get sick up there.
How many were in your rooms in the cabin?
Yeah, we had a cabin for, would have been for one person, but there were 3 bunks in it.
3 bunks?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 3. So there were 3 times as many in the room. We turned on the water, an hour in the fresh water, an hour in the morning, and an hour in the evening.
Then you could take your showers?
Yeah, you had to do everything.
During that period of time?
Mm-hmm. They did have salt water, but I tried to shower in that, and that was pretty terrible. Well, and then we had two meals a day, two sittings. That's all you had.
You didn't have breakfast?
No, just two meals.
Mm-hmm. You mean you got up in the morning, and how long did you have to wait to eat?
I don't know. We had four sittings. Mm-hmm. They had people divided in what they call four sittings.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever sitting you at, you went at that time, and I have some stuff at home that tells me about when it was, but I didn't bring it.
Was the food good?
No.
You had enough of it, though,
it's
didn't you?
It's pretty terrible. For breakfast, they serve kidneys and liver and stuff you were not used to. Mm-hmm. And the problem was people would get sick and they didn't clean it up. They'd just throw sawdust on the floor.
Ooh, you mean in the kitchen?
In the eating room, yeah.
Uh-huh. Ooh.
It was pretty, and if you weren't ill when you went down there, you were. You almost got ill down there. But I survived. And
how long was this trip?
10 days.
10 days at sea?
Mm-hmm. Normally that'd be I think when I came back it took 5 days, but they zigzagged. They said they went down as far as the Azores. Because it was, it was a lone troop ship.
Did you go across the sea, the Atlantic blacked out, or did you have lights on your
ship? Oh, they had it blacked out.
They had it blacked out,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
See, I have never experienced that.
Oh, yeah, you didn't have any lights.
Mm-hmm.
But they would let us up on deck at night, and you felt your way around the deck.
I see.
It was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. When one of the nights, we decided they had a lounge. It was almost impossible to get a seat in the lounge. So one day we sat and saved this table all day long so we'd have a place to sit at night. It wasn't worth it. We took turns holding this table down so we'd have a place to sit that night.
Were the officers and the enlisted men separated on
your
ships?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And
were you with the officers or the enlisted?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was with the officers. They only had, out of those 8,000 troops, there were only 200 women, or 220 women on board. So it was kind of interesting.
Could you play bridge all day or something like that?
I remember playing cards occasionally in the lounge. But we stayed out on deck because it was a lot more pleasant out there.
Now, you went over during what month?
March. It was rough.
March. And it was cold out on deck, wasn't it, then?
Oh, yeah, we wore our coats and our gear, and you had to wear your gas masks, and you had to wear this, and all this stuff. You had to keep it handy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you have any communications, radio communications, as to what was going on? In 1943, I'm trying to think of where the action was at that time.
Well, of course, they hadn't gotten over on I think they had action in North Africa, but they hadn't gone into Europe yet.
I see.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The Germans were marching into Holland at that time, do you think?
Well, I think they already had.
They had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was a very interesting trip, and we met young men. And then once a day we had, they made everybody go up on deck to a drill.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to run around a certain place and they had a path that you had to follow to get to your lifeboat. And from what I understand, they had 2,000 lifeboats for 8,000 people, so if that had gone down, it would have been pretty sad, but we didn't have any trouble.
Mm-hmm. But 2,000 for 8,000, well, that's only four to a lifeboat. That isn't many, is it?
No, 2,000 lifeboats and enough for 2,000 people.
Oh, I see. I see what you mean.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I didn't think there would be 2,000. That's
there were just enough lifeboats for 2,000.
For 2,000, huh.
But, on our lifeboat, we used to have fun standing out there on deck. We had a Navy beach battalion. A few of them were in our lifeboat. Rather odd, this beach battalion came into our unit to our hospital later for some training. After they landed on D-Day, they came back for some more training. And I saw this young man again that had been in our lifeboat assignment on deck. So it was quite a trip. There's no two ways about it. Then arriving at Greenock in Scotland.
What's the name of that place? Spell it.
Greenock?
Mm-hmm. Grenoch?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Mm-hmm. That's from the Cynic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Canadian animal. Greenock. It's right outside of it's outside of the fjord and outside of Glasgow, I guess. It's way out on the end. Most of the ships that came in landed there, because that's as far as they could come in. But it was quite interesting when we first saw land. That was kind of exciting. A couple of Spitfires came out and flew around the ship, and it was kind of exciting. For Spitfires, you know, you've seen.
No, what's a Spitfire?
It was the English fighter plane.
Oh, English fighter plane.
So then we went on, and they took us from the ship on to going back a little bit. It was kind of interesting loading that ship at New York. We all wound in there.
When did they load onto it?
Went in the side door, you know, or the side on the pier. You know, we all marched in there. We had to carry our own luggage. We were loaded.
You had to carry your own luggage?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we watched, I remember seeing them load four lockers. Our lockers were put on separately, foot lockers. And we saw some dropping in the water, and we were hoping it wasn't ours.
Actually, some of the foot lockers were lost?
Yeah, they dropped right down into the water when they were loading up.
Were they in the foot lockers, were the army issue clothes in there, or were they
mostly
personal clothes?
Mostly our personal things we took over, although some of it, yes.
Combs and
issue also. Mm-hmm. Issue also, because we had been issued our striped uniforms and capes, and because what we had on were, I think we wore slacks and in their heavy overcoat type thing and all that when we were going on. We were pretty packed, let me tell you.
It doesn't sound like too pleasant of a trip.
Well, it wasn't too bad. We were young.
I know. You can experience those things and enjoy them then. Yeah. Hardships are
challenge. We were all doing the same thing, so that makes a big difference.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, we got over there. And then from Greenock, we went on the train to Llandudno, Wales. And this is a resort town in Wales. And it had little hotels right along the beach, and that's what we were billeted in. These English people just told them, and they were told they had to put up these people. I don't know, they had some rough times too, I'm pretty sure. I gained about 10 pounds almost rapidly there, because we were told we had to eat everything, you know, that we got on our plate, and everything was starchy. There was a real change of diet. You didn't get the fresh things, and you really risky. Starchy food.
Did you get any meat?
Oh yeah, they had meat. Okay. Of course, that was the powdered milk, powdered eggs days. Never saw any fresh milk all the time you were over there.
I know, that's the one thing I wanted when I came back from Tokyo, was a glass of milk.
Right. But
and
the powdered milk, it wasn't as good as what they have now.
Mm-hmm. I know they had a mechanical cow in Tokyo, and it was acceptable. We called it a mechanical cow, where they reconstituted the milk. But it was nothing like the real McCoy.
They were told not to drink milk over there because they were afraid of TB, I guess. Some of their cows weren't properly tested or something. Mm-hmm. So we were told not to drink English milk.
Yes, back in those days, indolent fever was a problem.
That could be.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're in England.
We're in Wales.
Okay, you're in Wales. And have you begun working now?
We were just there, and they had us marching a little every day. I think I got a flu, and I went to a hospital for a few days, too. I went to one near.
What was your housing like there in Wales?
In Wales? Well, it was a hotel. Cold. No heat.
This is March, April?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They didn't have any
1944?
Heat. Didn't have any heat in the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And, there were several in the rooms. I can't, we were quite doubled up. We had quite a few sleeping, if you had a double bed, there were sure two of you in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember, there weren't too many in there, about 10 of us in one hotel, I guess 10 or 11. And then we had to march, we had to go clear down Oh, it was about a mile to where the mess hall was.
Oh, you had to walk a mile to eat?
Yeah, I had to walk about a mile to eat. But that didn't
twice
help.
A day?
No, three times there.
Well, three times there. We had three meals.
Yeah.
And would that be 6 miles a day or three miles?
I suppose it would if we went back to the room.
Mm-hmm.
Then we did a little marching. We were there Easter, I remember, and that was fascinating. We had an Easter service up on this hill in Mondino, and it was very interesting. We had a sunrise service up there on this big hill. It's, I think, Lewis Carroll must have had something to do with that area, because they had a monument with the rabbit by a pond. So apparently Lewis Carroll spent some time in this area. I have forgotten.
Who is Lewis Carroll?
Who wrote Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, yes.
And but it was a very interesting place. Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all those odd names. And I guess while we were doing this, the Colonel was dickering for where we were going to go, and he chose Oxford, I guess.
So Oxford?
Well, that was the... It was in a suburb of Oxford. Hiddington was the name of the little suburb. He chose this hospital. It was a brick hospital with steam heat, believe it or not. And it was one American hospital in Britain. It had been built with American money during the Battle of Britain, this hospital. So they let Americans use it. It was a hospital with Quonsets that they had, and they had Quonset huts and brick buildings. And with the two of them, it was a 1,000-bed hospital. Later, when we went to tents, we must have added at least 500 patients. So we got up to 1,500 with personnel to take care of all of them. According to something I've heard recently, this was the biggest hospital in the European theater that we were in. And of course, he made it pretty much of a, the Colonel made it pretty much of a show place, and an awful lot of people used to come there. They were always having visitors, generals and whatnot. And we were always cleaning, I'll tell you. Right after, let's see, D-Day was the 6th. Our hospital was open before that, of course. And our patients would be boys that were, well, I know we had some paratroopers, one that had his hand broken because he'd gotten away of a propeller and accidents that occurred under the normal run of things. Correct. Yeah, now, let's see, on D-Day, we, about 4 days after D-Day, we got our first patient load, which was around 300 patients. And the interesting thing about some of those early cases were they had rifle wounds, not very large wounds, but later as they went on into inland, they had shrapnel, which were, you know, the wounds were much nastier. Yeah. So, let's see. For a while, we were very busy. We would work about 10 hours a day. We didn't get our hours off that we had normally gotten, but in time we did. When things simmered down and they had the surgeries caught up and the hospital was full. When they come to our hospital, they usually came from first aid or station hospitals where they did not attempt to treat the wounds. They would slap a bandage on and then put a cast on it. So when they'd arrive at our hospital, the cast would be very bloody, and then they'd take them up to surgery and do the first repair work. We had some excellent surgeons in our unit. And in the ward, I worked on an orthopedic ward. And we had many severe bone injuries. I remember one case that appeared to have a gas gangrene type thing that started bubbling. Boy, did they take him up in a hurry. That's the only one I saw. That they used to have so much trouble with gas gangrene in World War I. Of course, at this time, penicillin was being used. We had quite a bit of penicillin, and they used them on a lot of patients. I remember it was penicillin in those days was a bright yellow and smelled to high heaven. It really was a nasty smelling stuff. They got it so it was more refined later on. So the penicillin you get nowadays is different. But it did work, and we didn't have too many infections. I remember some Russians visiting our ward once to see how come we didn't have very many infections. They came and visited the ward. So I stayed on the orthopedic ward almost the full time I was over there, with an occasional shift to another place, but not too often. And you took your turn on night duty. And off hours were kind of fun. We had good time over in England. Oxford had a nice theater. And we went to plays every so often. I saw some very famous actors and actresses there. Vivien Leigh was in one play I saw. And John Gielgud, who became famous later over here in the U.S., I saw him in Hamlet over there. And we got into London several times. It wasn't a very long run on the train to London from Oxford. It was a short run.
What do you mean by short?
Well, it was less than an hour, I think, or an hour, maybe.
Mm-hmm. That would be short.
Yeah, wasn't bad. And, we had good times in London. But it was when we were in Wales, an officer had made arrangements and ordered a lot of bikes. So we all bought an English bike, or many of us did. And then we'd bike around town. And I had a great bike. It was a nice little bike. I wish I had thought to bring it home. Some people did ship them home, but I never did. I just sold it over there. Maybe that was just as well, because we were able to get them and maybe they couldn't. A lot of people use bikes over there. They did a lot of their transportation on bicycles.
I imagine there was a shortage of gasoline and supplies in general.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. They were severely rationed.
How did the English treat you?
Well, nice. I mean, Welsh I didn't get too acquainted with. We weren't there that long. Well, they were nice.
They were glad to have you there?
Well, I don't know. I guess so. They had to put up with a lot, I think, from Americans. I met one couple. I went to a town outside of Oxford. My cousin had been there, stationed there, and he gave me their name, and I went to visit their home. It was a town called Chipping Norton. And they came into Oxford once, and I took them out to the hospital to eat. Met them downtown. They had this couple, interestingly, they had two children that had been evacuated from London. That's what they did with a lot of their children. They moved them to the outskirts so they wouldn't be hurt or injured in London. And they had two children from London there. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Did you see much bombing in London?
In London? Oh, I saw results of it. I wasn't there.
During a blackout?
Oh, there was blackout all the time we were there.
Uh-huh.
But you'd see bombed areas, yes. Right, St. Paul's Cathedral, this was flat all the way around it. You can't see why St. Paul's was still there. It was amazing. Here's this cathedral right in all this rubble, sitting in all this rubble. I guess one bomb did land in St. Paul's, and some man managed to detonate it, or what do you call it? He didn't. Anyway, dismantle it. Yeah, we went to Madame Tussaud's, and we usually stayed at the Red Cross Hotel. That was easiest. It was quite easy, and you could eat there.
Did you have to pay?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not much. Mm-hmm. And they had an officer's mess at Grosvenor Square, and it was at the hotel. I think it was Grosvenor Hotel. Huge room. And it was just filled with tables of people eating. It was very interesting to eat there. So, anyway, as we were there a long time, we'd ride our bikes for miles when we'd get off work, and we had good times. It wasn't bad. England was not a bad place to be during the war, especially where we were. And you worked just like you did But one thing about it, of course, all our patients were young men, so it was very not depressing, really. Sometimes it was, of course.
They had a good sense of humor in spite of their difficulties.
And they were all there, and they had...
Some of them were kind of glad to be in
Georgia
and
to
go
be
back home.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you.
Some of the visitors we had at this place was very interesting. Queen Elizabeth came. This was King George's wife, you know. And she came to a tea, and we all shook hands with her.
Oh, wonderful.
You don't shake hands with a queen very often.
No.
In fact, they don't normally shake hands, but she did. She had was pretty limp hand, but she was very nice. Very nice lady, and she visited the hospital. Well, I think Joe Lewis came through the hospital. Frances Bolton, who was a congresswoman, she was instrumental in having the nurses made regular officers instead of that. Originally, they weren't. They were just, they weren't real officers, but she made them real officers. She put through a bill that made them officers in the Army. She would visit the hospital, and there were others. So it was quite an interesting place to be. Well, let's see. Can I think of anything else that happened in England that's of interest? I don't believe other
than... Well, then D-Day to VE Day was roughly almost a year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Not quite.
Mm-hmm. And, what was it, May or April? I can't remember when it was.
When?
VE Day.
I think it's June 6th, 1945.
June 6th? It couldn't have been the 6th. It probably was... I don't remember when it was. Isn't that awful? Yes, and after VE Day, our hospital closed down. And they moved us to another hospital. We were supposed to go to the China Burma India Theater.
Oh, CBI.
Yeah, and... But then, of course, VJ Day occurred while we were sitting there. So in order to move people home on point systems, they moved our unit over to Liège, Belgium, to the hospital that was it was the Citadel. I don't remember which hospital we took over at that time. But so I was in Liège from... October, got over there I think in October, and I was there about six, seven weeks. I wasn't in Liège too long. That was an interesting place. I went on one ambulance trip to Paris to take a girl to the another nurse to the hospital. I went along with her to go to the hospital and spent a few days in Paris then. And after that, my orders on that trip, when I came back from Paris, my orders came to go home. So that's what happened.
When you came back to the States, Lil, did you have any particular adjustment?
Well, I'll tell you, I landed in Boston. We got on the train, I think, that night. Spent a day there. Got on that train that night and went to Des Moines, Iowa. And I was home in 3 days. And it was a terrible adjustment. I think it was some of the awfulest times I spent in my life was after I came back from the service. You came back from all that activity, all the somebody around all the time, to nothing. Nothing.
Where were you living then?
In Brookings, South Dakota. My mother was in Brookings.
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed there a few months and decided that I was going out to California to look around. So I did. I went out to California and visited my cousins, and I considered going to UCLA to school. But the lines were so long with the veterans, just to get a smidgen of information, that I didn't go there. I think I'm pretty close winding up this time, am I not? If I'm back after the war.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Except it was interesting going to school with all the veterans. When I returned, I came to Michigan State, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So... But there were a lot of good days in there, and I still have friends that I made. Our unit still has reunions, and they've had them all different parts of the country. our colonel, he's in his 80s now. He's attended every reunion. He says this one in June will be his last one. He was an interesting man. And he put out a book. He published a book privately about, called it Oxford Angels. Reading it, he was in a different place than I was. Of course, he was with dukes, and he was with all different bigwigs, and that's what his book talks about. But it's still interesting to have, because it has pictures, and it does tell some things that you didn't know was going on when you were over there in the unit. So it's an interesting book, and I'm glad I have it.
And then you went to Michigan State, and you finished your degree there, is that it?
Yes, I, well, of course, I didn't want to go back to South Dakota. I decided I just didn't want to go back to South Dakota.
What drew you to Michigan?
I had a cousin that was living here, and you could get into Michigan State if you had a place to live. That's all they required.
Oh.
Everything was full.
Housing
was very short. And my cousin lived in an apartment not too far from East Lansing. And in fact, when I came here, she had me all ready to go to school. She'd done all my paperwork for me. So all I had to do was walk here and look silly and walk in, and I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
I went 7 terms, and I finished my, because I'd gone a year in South Dakota State, and I finished my degree, and I chose microbiology, bacteriology then, because they didn't have any nursing program at that time. They had it, I probably continued with that.
Thank you, Lil.
You're welcome.
And that was Lillian Kivala, recording for the Lansing Unit of the Women's Overseas Service League, the 22nd of January, 1986. Thank you.